Okay, our next presenter is remotely coming in to us. The sound makes the picture, making audio unforgettable with next-gen TV and Dolby AC4. I'll introduce Tim Carroll at the end. He'll also be on for live Q&A after his presentation, so roll tape.
Hi, I'm Tim Carroll from Dolby Laboratories. I'd like to thank Kent for the invitation and Kyle for organizing this over the summer. My apologies, I'm not able to be there in person, but next year. They tell me if I behave, I might get invited back and I can actually be there in person. So today we're going to talk about ATSC3 or Next Gen TV and AC4 and start with a little bit of a review of where we're at with ATSC3 and then contrast it against where we're coming from with ATSC1. So ATSC3, probably the most important document is the core A300. It describes how the entire system comes together, and it ties together many, many parts of the standard, from audio and video encoding to data to transport to all sorts of things. Regarding audio, a really important section is 5.1.15, because it's about audio. But the important part of this section is that it describes how for ATSC3 terrestrial and hybrid TV, within a given region, one and only one audio system shall be used. And it's from other parts of the ATSC standard. So it says here, A342 parts 2 and higher. That's important because it gives CE manufacturers the ability to build a product and know that it will support the features required for a given region. It's also really important to note this because if you're using a television set, and this has happened in the early days of all standards, use a TV as a piece of test gear. If the audio happens to work, it's likely more by chance than by design. You know, the early ones may have everything. Later ones may have only what's specifically required. So it's important to have the standard. Now, to reinforce this, the North American Broadcast Association, NABA, has stated that North American broadcasters have chosen A342 Part 2, which is AC4, as the audio system for use in Mexico, Canada, and the United States. So there we have it. So what is A342 Part 2? It's the AC4 system. It's an enhanced feature set, so you can do more. And it does build on the capabilities of, it says here, past ATSC audio systems. It doesn't just say ATSC1. There was almost an ATSC2, and that used AAC for mobile and handheld. ATSC1 uses AC3. They're different, and AC4 and ATSC3 are significantly advanced compared to these previous standards. Pearl, an industry group that is made up of, I'm sure there are stations present at the at this event today that are part of Pearl. They commissioned a study to look at the interesting parts of next-gen TV. We'll use next-gen TV and ATSC3 interoperably. ATSC3 is the technical part of it. Next-gen TV is the friendlier consumer-facing message. So Pearl contracted Magid, who is well-known for doing consumer studies, to look into ATSC3 features and see what resonated with consumers. They've done it a few times. The second study mimicked the first study. The results were very similar. Audio turns out to be a top differentiator for consumers. And the things that consumers pointed to were not surprising, right? Consistent loudness for not just commercials, but also content. That's important. We're, you know, 20 years on, we're almost there with ATSC1, right? Immersive theater-like sound. So what's that? We'll get into that later. And that it can fix speech that's hard to hear. This has become the new loud commercial problem with media delivered over televisions. And ATSC3, or next-gen TV, will be one of the first to offer a solution for this via something called dialogue enhancement, or the friendly consumer-facing name Voice Plus. So AC4, here's the marketing stuff. It enables delivering what consumers want. And it's true. You'll see why in a few minutes, and why it's such a significant step forward from what we have been doing as an industry until now. It provides accessibility. So dialogue audibility is an accessibility feature. Makes it easier to watch television. Makes it easier to stay on a channel. And that's important. Audio description. We'll get into the details of this a little bit later in the presentation. But until now, audio description has largely been a mono presentation, if it's available at all. It's not very exciting to listen to, but there's new ways to do that. It's adaptable. We've sort of always had this, but not to this degree. Multiple devices can be driven with a single bitstream, and the output is optimized. You don't lose as much as you used to in the past when you switch between devices. Immersive, three-dimensional sound, so Dolby Atmos. It's premium. I mean, this is the audio that you're able to get on OTT services, on Blu-ray. This is the same Dolby Atmos that you're familiar with in other areas. It can now be delivered by your station. Personalized, customized experiences, multiple languages. Think about watching a baseball game and not just hearing your home team announcer, which is cool, especially if you're in an area where you're not with your home team. Let's say you're a Red Sox fan and you're in California. To be able to hear your Red Sox announcers is pretty cool. What might be more interesting is, especially in this day and age, if you're watching a baseball game, hearing like a Barstool radio commentary, making it more interesting, you know, hearing the conversations that you might hear on a Barstool in the comfort of your own home. So here's where we get down to brass tacks. Improvements since ATSC 1 and AC3. Believe it or not, that was back in 1995. I have a hard time believing that and rectifying it in my own head, but it's true. It's been going on that long, and we sure have come a long way. One of the primary things is processing power. DSPs have advanced significantly. In 1995, AC3 encoding, also known as Dolby Digital, required an entire farm for encoding. The very first encoders had three loaded cards in essentially what was a PC. I can't even remember how many DSPs were present. There were probably 20 DSPs on each one of those cards. Massive. That encoder was $50,000 to encode 5.1 channel audio. And most of that money was spent on those cards. The next generation got it down to a single card. That was maybe 5 years later. Single card. And the price also went to about half. Eventually, we went down to a one rack unit high product, and it was licensed into other video encoders and whatnot. You find it commonly today. But that one rack unit high product used a grand total of three DSPs. Now, granted, that was, let's see if I can quickly do the math here. Well, that was less than 10 years after the original encoder. So 1990, $899. The DP569 was around. And again, a significant drop in price. Three DSPs are much less expensive than three cards filled with DSPs. That's great. It always increases rapidly on the pro side, but it's also increased on the consumer side. DSP in a modern television is a rocket ship. It is extremely powerful. It's powerful enough to run not just decoding, but believe it or not, also encoding, if it was necessary. There's tons of horsepower. And so we still do the heaviest lift during encoding, but the consumer side does things like loudness control, virtualization, so making two speakers sound like more, speaker equalization, which makes small speakers sound like they're larger. So this additional processing horsepower can be put to good use, and it actually eases some of the burden on the broadcaster. There are new modes. We have channels, which everybody understands, left channel, right channel, center channel, and we have objects. Objects simply are channels, and they've got positional data with them. So it could be a dialogue channel with positional information saying, reproduce this from the center channel speaker. It could also be, this is the sound of a bumblebee, and it's going to be flying around the room, and so the positional data is going to vary. That audio channel and that positional data on the consumer side, as part of the AC4 decoder, hit a renderer. And that renderer uses the positional data to map that, let's say the B sound, into whatever number of speakers are connected to the device. We can also have compositional configurations. You know, we could have this with ATSC1 as well. You might remember something called a bitstream mode, BS mod. That's complete main. You could have dialogue, you could have effects, you could have music. You could do compositional back then, but it required that the receiving device have enough decoders to do it. And this is a should shall thing, right? You probably should have three decoders, which meant that because you shall only have one, there was only one in most televisions. And that meant that compositional would have to wait another couple of decades. Well, built into AC4 and next-gen TVs are as many decoders as are necessary to do things like music and effects and separate dialogues. So rather than having multiple complete main mixes, you could send the music and effects and dialogue separately. So it's more efficient and it allows more flexibility. It does require changes upstream, no doubt, but it's built in and we can rely on it being present, which is important, which we couldn't do before. Dialogue enhancement, probably personally one of my favorite features. It may be what lets my household use closed captioning less because they can't hear the dialogue currently. Again, we call it Voice Plus. We'll get into the details of what's happening there, but let me just preface all this by saying it's included for free. As soon as you turn the encoder on, dialogue enhancement metadata is automatically being generated. So even with the content you have today, you're going to do dialogue enhancement right from day one. That's a big advantage. It really works fairly well. And Dolby Atmos, which we'll get into right now. So probably the leading question we get is, what the heck is Dolby Atmos? Turns out it's not just height. That used to be the easy way to describe it. Well, if it's got overheads, then it's Dolby Atmos. Well, that's true. Dolby Atmos can have discrete overhead speakers. But if you don't have those speakers, then anything that you were going to send to those speakers would essentially fall on the floor. So I think a better way to describe it, my colleague Kerry Thomas on the music side came up with this, and I think it's a great description. Atmos is a translational format. So what does that mean? It allows us to completely decouple the input and output channels. What does that mean? So here's ATSC1. With AC3, we could encode from 1 to 6 channels, you know, so 5.1, and we could decode those same 1 to 6 channels of audio at the consumer side. Excuse me. This meant that if you only had 2 speakers, a simple down mix would take place. If you were only sending stereo, later on, you could, you know, the consumer AVR could invoke Prologic or some matrix decoding to fill the speakers, but it was completely out of the control of the content producer and really the broadcaster. So here's where it gets different. With AC4, input and output are completely decoupled. It doesn't matter whether it's mono or stereo, 5.1, 5.14, 7.14. So that the last dot 4 talks about overhead channels, or if it's objects. All of those inputs can be reproduced over pretty much whatever the consumer has for reproduction. In a lot of cases, it's the built-in speakers in the television. But remember, when we're talking about DSP, those speakers can virtualize that immersive audio so that those 2 speakers sort of disappear from the television and you hear the audio in the room without the need for additional speakers. Can you make it more accurate by adding discrete speakers? Absolutely. Can you do the same virtualization over headphones? Absolutely. This is what happens with Dolby Atmos music. The Dolby Atmos mix is being virtualized for the 2 speakers that you have over your ears, and it sounds bigger than just those 2 speakers. So for the broadcaster, here's an important and I hope simple summary. So the M word, metadata, it's before required many settings, most of which I have to admit did very little, some of which did a lot and could really create heartache and heartburn if they were set wrong. Well, with AC4 and next-gen TV, metadata is extremely automatic. The housekeeping stuff, things like dial norm and downmix coefficients and all that sort of stuff, that's automatically calculated in the background. We have the horsepower to do it, and so it's done. Literally, it's power on and go for today's formats. If it's stereo or 5.1, you're all set. Turn the power switch on, you're good to go. Loudness compliance, it's built in and it's automatic. It's something called RTLL, or a real-time loudness leveler. That will give compliance. It won't provide frequency shaping. So if you're relying on external equipment to do that for, let's say, a signature sound for the station, you'll still need to do that. But compliance, so making sure that dial norm and the loudness of the audio match so that it follows ATSC A85, that is built in and it works without any additional settings by the broadcaster. Mixing and monitoring tools to support all this stuff, the drive has been to encourage third-party partners to build everything. You might be surprised to find out that Dolby doesn't build hardware any longer. Not for encoding. We used to, and we did it to help people get started. But really, we know that the best place for this stuff is in companies that can focus on building hardware and focus on supporting broadcasters directly. And so our goal is to enable that and support companies like Harmonic and Atem and Linear Acoustic and Telos and Dectech and you know, the list goes on. We want them to do it because they're the experts. So the capability of the system is far more than production at the network level is ready for. But at least from transmission to consumer, it's ready. So as these the current roadblock. So as things expand and more than 5.1 channels can be handled, and we get into more announcers and more sophistication, the system's ready for it, and the infrastructure will catch up. So I put down here, creativity with SDI enables carrying legacy and some new capabilities. It's true. So 5.1.4, which is a normal 5.1 with four overhead channels, that can be downmixed or rendered to create a 5.1 version. So really only the 5.1.4 would need to be created, and the 5.1 can come from that. That frees up 10 more channels of audio. Some of it's going to be for audio description. Some of it might be for alternate languages. But SDI can still play, thankfully, a really helpful part in this. It's not quite limiting yet, although it's going to happen. And what's good is that the coming IP infrastructure, so 2110 and all of the parts of 2110, SMPTE 2110, support this from carrying audio to carrying advanced metadata. So it's not that metadata is removed. It's just, it's out there when it's necessary. But for right now, the way things are being done, it literally plumbs directly into an encoder and you're on the air with what you've got today. That's a really good way to start this. Remember the early days of ATSC1. It was none of that. It was largely analog facilities. So then there was the conversion to digital. Then there was the conversion from digital to getting this into a transport stream. It was a big drink from a very powerful fire hose. So to get up and running today, video encoders, again, unlike ATSC1, think back, ATSC1, first video encoders had stereo AC3 audio encoders built in, which meant that if you were one of the stations carrying ABC's 101 Dalmatians, you couldn't use an encoder that was built into a video encoder. You had to use an external encoder. And at the time, it was very likely a DP569. Today, it's different. The major video encoder manufacturers are all... they've either implemented or are very close to finishing implementation of AC4 encoding. And there is no two-channel AC4 encoder. If you implement AC4, you get the whole Megillah. It's all there, which is good. It makes some things easier. So AV sync is always easier with less boxes. It's not a comment on video encoder manufacturers or external audio encoder manufacturers. It's just less controls means less chance for error. Packaging is a surprisingly complex little gift that ATSC3 has delivered. And it is the modern version of an MPEG transport stream. So when we package the output of a video encoder and an audio encoder, it's not in an MPEG transport stream with PIDs like it was before. In today's world, in ATSC3, this is packaged into Dash. So Dash should ring a bell. This is how OTT and VOD and other services deliver content. Dash segments include audio and video and data. Dash is also generally a bi-directional format. So when you look at a piece of content using Dash, you're sending a request based on what your decoder can handle or your viewing device can handle. With broadcast, of course, broadcast is unidirectional. There is no back and forth. And imagine the size of the bitstream if 100,000 viewers decided to hit pause, every one of them is going to need a slightly different bitstream. That can work with an internet connection, but less so with an RF connection. So we use something called route. And I have to write this down. It's easy to say route dash. Route is real-time object. What does that say? Yeah, over unidirectional transport. Basically, what it means is sending bash segments one direction without waiting for a response from the sync device, the consumer receiver. Getting all of that synchronized is somewhat challenging. And it's different when a video encoder is passing through an externally generated AC4 signal. And you'll see why in a minute. It can absolutely work. It's done commonly this way. We just came off of some very successful Olympics broadcasts. And in that case, much of the AC4 encoding that was being done was separate and it was passed through. So it can work. Housekeeping functions like Nielsen watermarking or Verence watermarking may or may not be included in the video encoder. So that's an area where an external encoder would be able to be more helpful. The other thing is, just like audio experts may not know as much about video, I will tell you, for me, it's certainly been like drinking from a very odd fire hose, learning about things like Dolby Vision and HDR and all that stuff. The same can be said about audio. There are some tweaky, complicated things that audio-focused companies are good at, but it can work. So again, video encoders are required to support pass-through, and AC4 is AC4. Whether it's external or built into the video encoder, everybody's implementing the same encoding. So really, it depends on, as a broadcaster, what works for you. So here's a screen capture from a Linear Acoustic 5300. This shows the AC4 encoder setup. Channel mode, that's the same as the previous BS mode or bitstream mode. I'm sorry, that's a little further. This is channel coding mode. So 5-1, it's normal. Left, right, center LFE, left surround, right surround. If it was 5-1-4, you would see that list expand and you'd see left top front, right top front, left top rear, right top rear. Those are the overheads. Here's the thing that people may be scratching their heads. Why is there an audio frame rate? That's a really good question. AC4 actually does create audio frames that are the same size as video frames. This simplifies lots of things. This comes from Dolby E, which was used for contribution and distribution, and still is in many cases. Audio and video frames were made to be the same size so that a vertical interval switch could occur and the audio would make a seamless transition. That is for similar reasons why AC4, even at the consumer side, is also matches the video frame rate. It simplifies handling of encoded audio, especially at MVPDs, when this might be coming in from an external source. It allows a standard video frame synchronizer to also handle encoded audio. It seems like it's not a big deal, but to MVPDs handling tons and tons and tons of inputs, this saves a significant amount of complexity. You'll notice the bit rate is set to 192 kilobits per second. While it's true that AC4, from an audibility perspective, matches the quality of AC3, so 96 kilobits per second AC4 matches the quality of AC3 at 384 kilobits per second. What's happened in 20 years? However, our recommendation is that even though it sounds good, you're carrying more than what you can actually hear. Things like watermarks require a little bit of headroom. So we suggest running this at 192 kilobits per second. And so here's where I stumbled before. Content classifier is the new bitstream mode. In this case, it's complete main. It means everything is there with that program. If you decode this, you will get the entire audio program. Unlike something such as M&E plus D, where you then have to decide, okay, music and effects, and then which dialogue. So it's not complete. It's compositional. You have to reconstitute that into what you want to hear. So complete main, pretty standard. Loudness practice. Here's where all of the metadata settings of like dial norm and DRC and all of that, it's all done with one setting. If you pick ATSC 85, dial norm is set to 24. You'll see the dialogue normalization there is shown as auto. And that is because in the background, dial norm is set to 24 and the real-time loudness leveler is making sure that that's actually the truth. And obviously this is pretty common language is English. Easy peasy. It did not quite come this way out of the box because it was set for a different channel config, but here's the cheat sheet. If you set things like that, you will be on the air and going. Also notice there's nothing, there are no settings in there that have anything to do with Voice Plus or dialogue enhancement. That is on by default in the background. It doesn't change your audio. It just allows more features for the consumer, but it's on and running. So from a production side, upmixing, still an easy way to improve things locally. Now, you know, it lights the light, right? This was important with in the 5.1 days. Less so today, I think. It requires at a minimum stereo audio. Stereo upmix is great to 5.1. It can do okay going to 5.1.4. Probably the most important part of upmixing is that it keeps dialogue centered. And if it's done right, it can improve the results of virtualization because it's keeping dialogue centered. Professional bests experimental. And what I meant by this was not just plumbing audio channels or audio into channels that might be empty. That can really mess with a virtualizer. I remember a customer from years ago decided that upmixing wasn't producing enough audio in the surround channels. This is directly related. I'm sure there are the broadcast people in the audience today know about left plus right, left minus right. It's a radio thing. It's also an analog stereo television thing. Well, surrounds are mostly in the left minus right. Center dialogue is mostly left plus right. If you have programming that's fairly mono, there's not going to be a whole lot of left minus right. So there's not going to be much in the surrounds once it's upmixed. The mistake was to improve this, the well-meaning person said, well, I'm just going to patch some of the original audio into the surround channels. And so what you ended up with was the original audio coming out of the front and the back, which if you were listening in 5.1 wasn't too terribly disturbing. If you were listening in stereo, it sounded like it was coming through a tunnel, that hollow, weird sound. And it's because of post-processing things that really didn't expect the same audio to be in all the channels. So just be careful and take a listen, but it can be a great help. Again, I said lighting the light is less important. What happens on the television is you'll get a bug that will say Dolby Audio, and it may or may not say Dolby Atmos, but that's the last you'll see of it. There generally is not a blue light that's glowing. I'm looking across the room here at my AVR, which happens to be tuned to an Atmos source. I have to go into a menu to actually see that, in fact, it's an Atmos source. So the idea of lighting the light is less important these days. The idea of keeping dialogue centered, that never gets old. That really is important. So some devices that can do it. Linear Acoustic pioneered this back in the day. And the latest versions, UpMax ISC, which does immersive upmixing, that's a standalone unit. And it can also be built into products that do encoding like the 5300. Consumer side, solid progress delivering next-gen experiences. And this came from services that predated next-gen TV. Dolby Atmos is available on pretty much every major streaming service. Take your pick. Many consumer electronic devices support Dolby Atmos, from televisions that virtualize to soundbars that virtualize or have external speakers that you can place in the room. And soundbars turn out to be a really good thing. There's no more getting caught on a ladder, sawing a hole in your house again, and telling your wife that it's I got to do this for my job. I need to have those overhead speakers. Because once your significant other hears what virtualized speakers can do and what a soundbar can do, it's a really tough argument. They can really sound good. And the other thing is, there's no getting it wrong. You can't put the center channel in the wrong spot. Well, I mean, anything's possible. You could put the entire soundbar under a couch. But let's just assume that somebody will put a soundbar in front of a television. You've at least got left, center, and right in the right position. That's 90% of the battle. Everything else is icing. So AC4 brings automatic consistent loudness. It is built in. I know I keep beating it to death, but it's important. You don't have to do anything. The consistency is there. Voice Plus, Dolby Atmos. So how does all this work? It relies on some fielded methods. It was compatible out of the gate. This was not true in the early days of ATSC1. Granted, you had to have a television or a receiver that had the RF tuner to receive ATSC1, and the same is true with ATSC3. But from there, the road has partially been paved. Part of it is something called MS-12, which we'll talk about in a second, and part of it is called MAT 2.0. So first, let's talk about MS-12. MS-12 began as MS-10, and then there was an MS-11, and you know, we're very creative at naming things, AC1, AC2, AC3, AC4. There is no AC5. MS-12 is a multi-system decoder. You can see in this slide that that decoding block decodes just about anything. AC3, EAC3, so Dolby Digital, Dolby Digital Plus, Dolby Digital Plus JOC. So JOC is joint object coding, that's Atmos, can also be decoded, can also handle AAC. Then there's a mixing stage, so that's to get the bleeps and bloops and other television sounds into the audio. And then the output is, if it's via the built-in speakers, there's virtualization, there's speaker tuning, dialogue enhancement is part of that, leveling, loudness leveling is part of that. And then something we call encoding. The encoding, this is the compatibility part. Obviously, if you've bought the television set, audio is going to come out of the speakers. But what if you have an old AVR that doesn't handle something like Dolby Atmos? Well, it doesn't matter. HDMI is able to signal what a sync device, so like an AVR, is capable of doing. And then MS-12 will decide to send only what can be reproduced. So if you have a legacy AVR that can only handle 5.1 channels of audio, no problem. MS-12 will produce a 5.1 channel signal and will send it to the AVR in a format that it can understand. What about if you wanted to send just PCM audio? I mean, HDMI is great. It'll support up to 8 channels. 514 is 10 channels, and supporting 10 channels over HDMI required a completely different approach, and that's where MAT 2.0 came in. So MAT is multi-channel or metadata and audio transport, but really it's multi-channel, and we understand that it carries metadata. You can carry up to 31 objects. So remember, standard HDMI is limited to 8 PCM channels. MAT allows 31 objects or even channels, PCM channels, plus LFE, so the subwoofer signal, and metadata to be carried over that same connection. So 100% of Dolby Atmos TVs and soundbars and AVRs that are shipping today can support Matte 2.0. This is good. It lowers latency. It lowers complexity. There's no reason to re-encode stuff. It's a simple connection. It also enables ATSC3 to work with all of these devices that had been designed and built prior to ATSC3 or next-gen TV even being a reality. So if you have a soundbar that's a few years old, it's going to work fine with an ATSC3 television. And you'll get most all of the benefits without having to replace the soundbar. This is a good thing. This is a great way to get a running start and not have to completely reinvent the entire consumer universe. Next-gen TV does not have time for that sort of a slowdown. Okay, let's talk about Voice Plus, saving the best for almost last. Pearl, the CTA, and Dolby collaborated to create a friendlier name than Dialogue Enhancement, although I think Dialogue Enhancement does it, but I'm all for friendly, so Voice Plus. It's as popular with consumers in all the testing that's been done as things like immersive audio. And to a lot of people, it's more important. They say it's inclusive. It allows us to watch people in the audience, but everybody can sit and listen and hear the dialogue, and that's really important. Cost-free, operates automatically in the encoder, present in all decoders. The industry is working to make the menuing a little bit more consistent across brands. If you have a next-gen TV, it does have Voice Plus. In some cases, it may be defaulted to on. You may have to dig for it in the menus, but I promise, at this point, the efforts are less on the technological side and more on the encouraging CE manufacturers to be consistent about something that is beneficial to all customers. It works with all sorts of legacy. I feel really weird about calling 5.1 legacy, but you get what I mean. Existing content, maybe a better word. It can extract dialogue from 5.1. Some people might say, well, just turn up the center channel. Dialogue's not always present in the center channel, and there's often a lot of other things present in the center channel. So just turning up center, and we all do it. I've done it. I've defaulted that way for a long time. The problem is with an action-adventure movie where there might be an engine screaming sound coming out of center, it's now also going to be a couple dB louder. It's not really going to help. Stereo, there is nothing to boost. It's either all louder or not. Mono, even more so, there's not very much you can do. But with the calculations done in the AC4 encoder, it's able to actually identify dialogue on almost a sample-by-sample basis and send commands to the decoder that if the consumer chooses to use it, will boost those samples that contain dialogue. It's remarkably effective. It can be even better when we get to dialogue that's separated, so compositional formats, music and effects plus dialogue. In that case, that D is generally just dialogue. So that can make Voice Plus more effective. But again, right out of the box, it's effective today. Here's basically what happens at the encode side. The input audio is analyzed. This takes a good bit of time. There's quite a bit of look ahead going on here. This is why latency is higher for AC4 than previous codecs. It's because of the dialogue enhancement analysis. And the parameters and controls are sent alongside the audio as part of the AC4 bitstream to the consumer. In the consumer side, this is more complicated than I think is actually what's happening. Dialogue enhancement can work two ways. It can both boost dialogue or it can lower background audio or some combination of the two. The important thing is, if I'm not sure that you can see my face and my hands in the corner here, is the distance between the dialogue and the background audio. That's the important part. Increasing that, the dialogue to noise or dialogue to background ratio, that improves intelligibility. It makes things easier to hear. So accessibility, I mean, we all hear about this all the time, but it turns out that we're, with next-gen TV, we're doing it right from the beginning. Voice Plus is an accessibility feature. It improves audio from your existing station audio today. People with hearing struggles will benefit from day one with a next-gen TV receiver. There are other accessibility features. We talked about AD before, right? So mono AD is really not great to listen to. Even as a normally sighted person, listening to it bothers me, because I know that right over here is the original audio that's immersive and it sounds great. Why can't we have both? Well, audio descriptions can be, with AC4, can be inserted over that immersive audio. It's totally possible. It's being experimented with right now. And so there is no reason to make that audio a second class participant in the broadcast signal. It can be so much better, and it doesn't take away from the efficiency for carrying the audio that needs to be carried. There will be more details forthcoming about this, but it is an industry-wide change. It's happening at the network level. You may have seen or heard during the Olympics live describing that. I find to be fascinating. It's sort of like closed captioning for audio, because I'd have the broadcast on in the background and I'd hear something interesting being described, and I'd look back up at the screen and see what I wasn't paying attention to. So it can be, it's not just for the visually impaired. It's also for, I think it's good for multitaskers. It lets you know when to pay attention to something that's interesting on the screen. And it's easier than ever to do. Nothing to worry about on the consumer side. Remember, the AC4 decoders all contain everything that's necessary to do better than mono. It's all of this stuff is easier to do today with live production, especially when we talk about a mono dialogue element. You'll see more and hear more of this as we head into new sports season, as the fall is approaching. I think you'll see things with certain big football games. We might have another Olympics remarkably close. This is going to become more and more commonplace, and it's something that is desirable. And I think universally, I think once people hear it, they'll decide that it's good for everybody that wants to use it. So we've made it. I appreciate everybody hanging in there for these slides. Here's some resources. We've got a slightly different version of the normal Dolby website. It's professional.dolby.com. That is a good place to dig into this. You can see things on the music side. You can see things on the Dolby Vision side. So that's the Dolby's HDR format. There's a lot of information there. There's a lot of documentation. Search works really well. That was not always the case on the regular Dolby website. It is significantly improved. ATSC.org. I will forewarn you, the ATSC3 standards are thick and detailed and a great cure for insomnia, even more so than ATSC1. But there is a lot of helpful recommended practices available there, quite a bit of good information. I'm mentioning here the Dolby ATSC3 audio handbook. You can search for that on the professional.dolby.com. I'm not providing a direct link to it because it's in the process of being updated and I want to keep this fresh. So if you search for it, you will find the very latest document. And that has some of the recommendations that I talked about earlier, and it gets into a little bit more detail for those who would like it. And of course, as always, I am committed to the broadcast community. I have been for my entire career, whether it was my first time at Dolby or after starting Linear Acoustic or coming back to Dolby, I'm available. So my Dolby email address is tcarr, T-C-A-R-R, at dolby.com. But my, believe it or not, my old Dolby email address was resurrected. So tjc at dolby.com works. Or you know how to find me. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm around. So if I can be of any assistance, I'm always here for you. And just let me know.
And we welcome live and in person Tim Carroll. Tim, thank you. Can you hear
Hello.
Us? Okay, there we go. We're running a little bit long here, but we can take one quick question.
Okay, Cliff.
Go ahead.
Have you got it? Okay. Yes, sir. One quick question, kind of out of left field. Is the ATSC, or I'm sorry, well, is the Dolby decode available also in telephones, in smartphones and things of that nature, since more of our content will be viewed that way, along with the ATSC 3 broadcast, pointing toward cloud sources?
That's a good question. Not really left field. I think you're right. It's become more pertinent since the ATSC spec was started. It seems like way too long ago. So the answer is yes, it's present in multiple Android devices. Samsung, I carry an iPhone and I carry a Galaxy as well. AC4 is present on the Android side. It's not native to iOS yet, but again, right now, AC4 and ATSC3 using AC4, that's the grand sum total of services using AC4. My guess is that as these things go, it took a while to get Dolby Digital and Dolby Digital Plus into these devices as well. I think AC4 is coming along fairly quickly. So stay tuned.
And we shall.
My face says I know more than I can tell you.
And we shall stay tuned. And with that, we need to leave it there. Tim Carroll, thank you very much.